If you're going to be taking your triathlon seriously in 2024, then now is the perfect time to get yourself a Wind Republic tri-suit. Wind Republic tri-suits have undergone extensive aerodynamic testing. They're ridiculously comfy to swim and run in, and they've got all the practical little details covered, like extra pockets for your gels. It's not often you get a really aerodynamic and fast tri-suit that is comfy, but Wind Republic have just nailed that. And I do think the other thing Wind have always done, and they've probably always done better than everyone else, is they make tri-suits that actually look good. And there is something about wearing a fun tri-suit that looks great that it just makes you really excited to race in it. And now is the perfect time to get yourself one because you can test it out in your pre-season training before you get stuck into your serious races. I personally, again, think it's really important that you do some long and hard sessions in your tri-suit before you race in it, so that on race day, it's something you're completely used to. So definitely take advantage of the time you've got now in training before your next big race to get used to your tri-suit. Use it on some long rides. Use it on some sort of harder runs. I think a lot of people don't run in their tri-suit enough, but now is literally the perfect time. So head over to Wind Republic's website. Use the discount code TTH15. That gets you 15% off your tri-suit or anything you want to buy, so your whole order from Wind Republic. So, yeah, go and have a look. There's lots of great designs, and all of their kits are super fast, super comfortable, and really practical.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Chase Pack Podcast. Andy has been removed as your host and I have been installed. You are listening to the silky smooth voice of Ari Clow down on training camp in Australia. I'm joined by Andy Horsfall Turner, one of the top swimmers after the swim block, maybe the top swimmer in long course triathlon. And Harry Palmer, the second best YouTuber on this podcast, will be third best YouTuber once Jack gets everything sorted out. And Lizzie Rayner, what a, rated her year a six after winning basically every race she entered in her first year as a pro. Is that correct?
That's quite kind, but not quite.
Almost. That's what I gathered. So just some housekeeping items. As I am the host of the show, and it is me, the American, with all the Brits. July 4th, 1776. Just got to rub it in your guys' faces a little bit more. We destroyed you guys. We absolutely destroyed you guys.
America. Or we let you have your freedom.
No. Nobody sails back across on wooden boats if they don't have to. So, yeah, absolutely destroyed. There was another one. Oh, yes. Last week, Penny's not on the podcast. She's asleep. I'm probably waking her up as I speak. But she was making fun of me for reading this book called The Way of Kings. And it's a really good book. And so many people on this podcast listening love this book as well. I got a lot of messages saying, yo, shut up, Penny. That book is crazy. So good. So thank you for all the messages. I don't think I actually responded to anyone, but I read most of them. Thank you for the support. It is a great book. Screw you, Penny. And so now that we got the housekeeping items out of the way, we can talk about triathlon a little bit. And we don't have a subject today, but instead we had some questions sent in that we will go over. So first question that we're going to go through is from Ruth Astell, who is a professional from also the UK. And I feel like this one is actually mostly aimed at Penny, so it's a shame that she is sleeping. But it was focused around Kona and how expensive it is to go there for athletes of our caliber. So what's the motivation? Basically, we're almost certainly going to go there and incur a massive financial loss. I think, what is it? Is it top 15? Do you guys remember cash?
Yeah, top 15.
Top 15, yeah.
And 15 is like a grand, right, as well. It's like nothing, isn't it?
It won't cover it, no.
And Penny's really, really good. Had probably one of the best race of her career and came 13th. So that kind of tells you the level that you have to be at to go there and not only win money, but, you know, top, unless you're in the top 7 or 8, you're going home with a lot less in your bank account than you came with. So why go to Kona unless you think you'll come top 8 is the question. Thank you, Ruth.
Depends if you got loads of money in the account. If you're Andy and you own Wales,
yeah, it's a nice little vacation.
Well, Wales don't pay me very well, mate. They don't pay very well.
They're paying you in swim spas. Yeah. Okay, so none of us have been to Kona, so maybe, in theory, wow, do you guys have dreams of going? You must have dreams of going to Kona, Andy.
Yeah, I think I'm happy to jump on, kind of get my 2 cents on it. I think for me, Kona is the reason I started triathlon. Like I'm pretty much your typical age grouper who sees the Iron Man documentary and thinks, I want to give that a go. That looks fun. That looks cool. I'm literally that guy. So yeah, my introduction was 2017 Kona, watching
great one.
Patrick pass Lionel on the run. Yeah. Like literally, like I remember watching that, like that one scene, and especially cause like Lionel's quite like, I'd say like Lionel's quite like a muscular guy. And like being quite like a swimmer build, quite a big lad. I'm like, oh shit, like you haven't got to be like stick thin and skinny to be a triathlete. I was like, this is cool. Like, what is this sport? So for me, I think that even if financially it made zero sense, if I qualified for Kona, I would 100% go. I think the debate for me would then be like, once I'd been a couple of times, like, does it then make sense? Because like, say you went there, you get a top 20, 30, whatever it is, you come back, you've lost money. You might go back there again. You might do slightly better or slightly worse. But then it's like, well, actually, do you go to Kona? Do you go to the World Championships unless you really back yourself finishing in the top 5 to 10? Would you say probably to like really like feel like you're contending for like the world championship?
I think you've really got to have a good expendable income to justify that kind of trip. If you're not shooting for that top 8, 10, like it's silly. It's just straight out silly in my opinion.
Well, but so in our case, where we all pretty much like none of us are surviving from triathlon, I think if you were truly a professional and you didn't have any other form of income besides sponsorship and podium incentives and whatnot, then maybe it makes really no sense financially. But I think the interesting thing about all of us in our positions is we all have some other form of income because we don't make money from triathlon. So it's a little bit we're not like age groupers who have a full-time job, who gotta have to get up super early to train and train after work. I think we all have a little bit more flexibility, but our money is not coming from whether we get in the top 7 or 8 or 15. So maybe we can be a little bit more inspired with our race choices. Like you're talking very, you know, a similar story to a lot of people who get in the sport where it's, you know, like I saw this on TV and it was one of the coolest things I ever saw and I decided I had to go there.
Mm. And that's what I think, that's what Kona is, isn't it? It's like some people go there and they absolutely hate the race itself, but like it's like you kind of have to scratch the itch.
Yeah, you can't deny there's a certain atmosphere. There's like you know, and I think I was chatting to Hannah Monday about this a couple of months ago, and like for me, the race itself actually has no appeal there because it's not, if you look at actually, I understand it's iconic, but for me, it's not a course that, it doesn't look fun. Does it
You're out
fun?
On a highway just, for 10 hours.
Yeah. I'd like a rather
Andy
genius.
Loves that shit.
I love TTing.
What are you, Harry?
Yeah, maybe not as much as Andy.
But if I got the opportunity to go as a spectator, I think I'd actually rather do that than race, just because for me it doesn't hold the same as dance as it does with you, Andy. Like I grew up watching all the short course stuff. Like for me, I wanted to go to the Olympics. It was obviously never going to happen, but Kona came to me quite late. So it doesn't hold the same place in my heart. Whereas my partner, Ryan, all he wants to do is go to Kona. Like he's an age grouper. It's like he just really, really wants to go to Kona. And I don't quite understand it in the same way that he does.
So you just want to go on vacation in Hawaii.
You want to go on a holiday. Yeah.
Just go on a holiday to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I'm probably the same as you, Lizzie. Like I don't look at Kona and think, oh yeah, you know what, that race like stands out to me. I really want to do it because I know full well that, I mean, let's take the cost out of it to start. The conditions I don't think would suit me. Like it's hot, it's humid, stuff like that. So that puts me off immediately anyway. Then obviously you take the price into account. I just like, no part of me thinks, oh, I'd really love to race. Now, obviously, if I did qualify, then maybe I'd change my mind. And if I could find some more cash to help get there or, you know, share accommodation with someone. But right now, as it stands, I think it is a bit like, I don't necessarily see someone like myself racing Kona because I think I'd go there and just lose money and not have a great race. Like, if it wasn't the world champs, I wouldn't consider it in the slightest.
Yeah.
So it's like, why would you obviously because it is a world champs, you do consider it, but if you take the world champs thing out of it, then would you actually still go there and race?
But it is the world champs.
I know it is, but it's like you've got to pick your races though, don't you? Like it's like, I don't, just because it's the world champs, do you want to go in there and still like know that you're probably gonna have a shit result?
Yeah, but like I think take this back to what you said on the podcast, like the first episode we did when you were talking about like qualifying for like 70.3 worlds in New Zealand. Mm. Like your initial thought was like, shit, that's a big trip. Like that's going to cost a lot of money. But like it's the world fucking champs. Like the best guys in the world are going to turn up at a race. Anyone who's in a competitive sport, it doesn't have to even be professional sport, but if you're in a competitive sport, you definitely want to go to the biggest race of the year and kind of see where you stack up, even if it doesn't make financial sense.
It's
you want to know where you stack up.
It's a life thing.
Yeah.
See, I'm the opposite. I don't know why. I don't know if I do. Like, I
why
genuinely...
do you do this sport, Harry?
Yeah. What is your purpose?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I genuinely think like where. So I'm just coming from my perspective. Like, I think it's you're better off racing races that you're going to perform better at, and then build your profile, get better, and then once you're at a level that you feel like you're probably going to be competitive at world champs, then that's the time to step into it. But I completely, like, I 100% get where you're coming from, Andy and Ari, like wanting to race the best in the world. I think that's like, yeah, that's sweet. But for me, I personally, like, I think I'd prefer to race races that the courses suit me better. I think I'm going to do better, raise my profile in the sport. And
you
then
want to stay in your comfort zone.
No, well, just be patient.
I think
being patient is a good thing. I don't think you need to rush these things.
Well, this kind of maybe leads into the second part of the question that we can chat about. With the pro series this year and the PTO, a lot of the top athletes are going to be occupied with other races, which really opens up opportunities for athletes of our level in the middle of the rankings to go make some more money, cherry pick races that we could podium or win, when in the past maybe we wouldn't even get in the top 5 or 8. Is that affecting your guys' race plans this year? Do you see it as an opportunity, or are you happy about the pro series where there will be a higher level of competition at many more races this year than there were previously? And are you, you know, I know you're going to Texas, Andy, you're going to South Africa. Are those both pro series races? South Africa?
Texas is, no. South Africa is not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Harry's ducking the competition. Andy is going to TT on a flat highway.
I think Harry's probably got a good perspective of this. Cause yeah. Like Harry, why South Africa?
So yeah, good question. I mean, it is partly to do with the pro series. I think Texas is going to be absolutely stacked. And you look at it, so the prize money at South Africa is overall 25 grand less. So it's not that much less. There's two slots less for Kona, but like I've just said, like Kona's not a massive like motivation for me. I personally think the competition will be a bit easier. I think the race will suit me a bit better. I think the course will suit me a bit better. And so, yeah, I think those are my reasons. And I do feel like, yeah, there are good opportunities.
The swim gets canceled.
I know, I'm concerned because I'd quite like the swim to not be canceled.
Yeah, it kind of like doesn't help you much. You're like at the level it would hurt against most guys.
Yeah, I don't know. Like if the swim was canceled, like it wouldn't be a deal breaker, but it would be quite nice to have.
Also doesn't count for PTO points. Is that the only thing? Obviously you still get all that money. Yeah. Like you don't get PTO points for a duathlon. Lizzie, I forget you had mentioned your potential race schedule. I remember you said mostly pro series races. I remember you said Zell. I don't know what else was in Europe. So you're gonna go, you know, race the top girls.
I've got quite a good mix actually, and I think that's what the pro series allows, is that you know which races are going to be the bigger races, whereas before, like, you couldn't really predict, like, you know, like Harry and I turning up 70.3 Belgium in September and it ended up being absolutely stacked. Like, it was one of the last European 70.3s, but I think what the pro series allows for is that you then know that, okay, that's 100% guaranteed to have a really high, like, strength of field score, and a really good opportunity to test yourself against the best outside of the PTO. I think I'm going to look at doing Mallorca, La Sarb.
Those are all pro series.
And then outside of that, I'm going to do, I think Valencia will be my first one, and then potentially Challenge Champs. But it's quite a lot of racing within quite a small space of time. So I'm going to have to think about it financially. It kind of depends on sort of winning a bit of money. But I am also throwing Swansea in there because it's 10K less prize money than it has been. So it's only 20K, but I think it's basically a free trip for me. It's effectively just down the road. I can stay with family. It's a chance to get some money. And it was my first pro race. I've done it for the last 2 years and I do really love it. So, you know, that could be a good opportunity to maybe get a podium. Yeah. Well, I was sixth the first year, fourth last year. So in theory, I should be second.
Okay.
If I do it this year.
We'll see if Andy comes off the bike 10 minutes ahead again like last year.
Yeah. 15 minutes this year.
It was good fun watching that run.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the same reason for me. I'm probably not doing Ocean, almost certainly not doing Oceanside.
Why have you decided not to do that?
Because, well, one, I want to sort of build into the season a little bit. Going until December. Got the world slot already. So it's both, the season is going until December 14th, and it's going to cost a lot of money to get there. So I have to be a little bit smarter with my pennies this year. And Oceanside is going to be like it's always very competitive because it's the first North American 70.3 of the year. And there's like always a couple international, like, big names that come over. But this year, as the first 70.3 in the pro series and being so close to Texas, like, everyone,
I think I've heard so many people are doing it.
Everyone is doing it. And so it's like, do I really want to start the season getting 15th, you know, like just getting absolutely destroyed, having a real sense of like where I am, gets, you know, spit out the back of the swim. And then it's just, you're not really in the race like that. It's kind of what you were saying, Harry. It's like, why go to a world champs? Like, there's a reason to go to a world champs if you're not going to win it, is because you go there and get experience and see what the top level is like. But if you're going to a world championship field and it's 70.3 Oceanside, like, then maybe there's no point. Yeah. There's no point in doing it. So, like, I'll probably wait until St. George, which is a pro series. So it'll be very competitive, but I feel like not that many international names are going to show up. Like, people will come for Texas and I don't know, maybe they'll stay. Probably not many people in Texas. It's
only a week, isn't it?
It's a week after Texas.
Yeah.
So probably people are not going to do it. I was guessing it would just be like your standard North American field. Like, I, for some reason, I feel like not that many people, because there are 70.3 options in Europe. So if you just need your 70.3 for your score for the Pro Series. But anyway.
The thing that would be interesting for you, though, is if people would, depends when this PTO announcement comes out, whether, is it tomorrow, I think? Mm-hmm. I think we're recording Monday. I think on Tuesday, the PTO announcement comes out. And I think that would be interesting to see where those races line up, because like a St. George race is one that like your Sam Longs, et cetera, would all like normally would turn up to.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't clash with a PTO race, they might still come. So that's kind of going to be interesting.
I believe it will. I think, right, they're starting in, I guess we don't have the, we don't have concrete info until tomorrow, but from what I know, and I won't tell you how I know.
Insider info.
There's been some insider info. I don't know anything absolutely for sure, but they're starting in, right, is it Ibiza's in March?
No, Singapore.
Or Singapore. Singapore's in March. And it'll go, and there's eight, or there's
a
good least
couple
eight.
Of American races.
Yeah, but they go every month. Like, there's going to be one a month. So I don't actually know what the exact date is, but in my mind, Sam is probably not really racing any American 70.3s or maybe 70.3s period, besides getting his slot if he wants to go to Worlds. So that's another thing is, yeah, I feel like these North American 70.3s are going to be, you know, it'll be Lionel, Jackson Laundrie, and, you know, Mark Dubrick. Mark Dubrick's probably going to be the guy to beat unless he gets on wildcard starts for the PTO races.
Standard kind of but, people then, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're, yeah, it's a competitive field, but
like, obviously, yeah, very like competitive, but they're kind of the regulars, aren't they? They're not.
Yeah. So you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
Everyone's always confused about what nutritional products they should be using while they train and race, and never really knows if what they're using is the best option for them. I can tell you from my experience of trying about 20 to 30 different brands over probably the last 8 to 10 years that Precision Fuel and Hydration is by far my favorite. I started with Precision by trying their PF30 gel, which I really liked, and then I tried their drink mix, which I probably liked even a little bit more, before finding the product from them that really took them from being, I think, my equal favorite brand at the time to, without question, my favorite brand, the PF90 gel. It's seriously amazing. And then more recently, I've been experimenting with their brand new Flow Gel. And honestly, I think it's now taken over as my favorite nutritional product I've ever used in my life. I don't ever do long rides or runs or hard sessions without it now. And if you're racing triathlon, particularly long course triathlon, or you're going to do a marathon, it's just the perfect way to get fuel in. Try it for yourself. Head to Precision Fuel and Hydration's website and use the discount code TTH15 for 15% off your first order.
We can move on to the next question from Mick Veldescholt. This question is basically, how much better do you get when you quit your job and start training full time? What's the difference between waking up early and staying up late to do your training and having all day to get it done? And can everyone here speak from experience?
Yeah, I guess we've all probably got experiences
not
with
really.
Not like no. Not necessarily quitting a job completely, but like probably scaling back on work.
Yeah.
I'll jump in straight away. So I guess from my perspective, and I've kind of, people always joke because I haven't ever really had a proper job. I've kind of worked as full time as you can work without actually having like a full time job. Because I basically finished uni and went into swim coaching. And people who know swim coaching, it's the most like antisocial job to have in the world. You're like coaching from 6 a.m. in the morning, and then you're coaching again in the afternoons. So when I basically progressed into triathlon and started training, I was training in the middle of the day anyway. Kind of like the free time, my free time was, you know, between coaching sessions and planning and that sort of stuff. So what I've found by just scaling back on work has just been like the sleep element. So like not having to set an alarm at like 5:15 in the morning, like 5-6 times a week to go coach. Cause what I found, the more training I did, it was like, I would get seriously tired after like coaching in the morning and I'd almost like need like a 20 minute nap just to be able to then go and do my first session of the day, because I was just absolutely like zapped.
That's right.
And then like I was coaching till like late in the evening, and then getting to bed late, and it's just like a rolling thing where your sleep is shit and you're just like not recovering. So my biggest thing in the last couple of years has literally just been having the evenings like to actually chill before bed, and then actually being able to like sleep in a little bit. I still like to start the day.
Right. And that's why you decided to have a kid.
I was just about to say, how's that working out?
So at the moment it's actually really good. No, actually she's actually been really, really good recently. So what the last, I'd say month, she wakes up once a night. We put her to bed at 7. So we get a couple of hours of chill in the evening. And then she wakes up at like 1 a.m., give her a bottle, and then she goes back to bed till about 7:30. It's a dream.
That's actually pretty good. Fair.
But it doesn't always happen like that, and it won't happen for long. So. But no, for
enjoy
me,
it
for
while
me,
it lasts, mate.
For me, the transition was just sleep and actually just having a bit more time to actually just have a bit of a life. Because when I was coaching and trying to train, I was just like, from the moment the alarm clock went in the morning, I was just like nonstop till 10 p.m. It was, yeah, crazy.
I mean, the last time I had a full-time job, I wasn't really doing triathlon. I was just running. And it was like quite easy, honestly, to like...
You can fit it in.
Yeah, I was running, like 100 miles, 160 Ks a week, like just before and after work. Like and the job was, it was fairly flexible. I mean, it was like the middle of the day, but, you know, I didn't have to be on at exactly 9. And a lot of the time I could get off like... well before like 4:30. So you know, you set an alarm for 7 a.m. you go run until 8:30. Like and I would do most of these runs kind of fasted or in just like a bar, so like basically just get up and roll out the door. So that gives you 90 minutes to run in the morning, and then in the evening you have, you know, whatever you want. So that's plenty of time to get in everything you would need to get in like a full load of distance running training. Obviously, maybe there's a recovery aspect in the middle of the day, like you'd rather be sitting chilling out instead of working, but that's like a 1%er, I'd say, or maybe like a 2 or 3%er. Like I don't think you would get, if you were just running, you would get that much better if you were working in the middle of the day, like doing something productive versus just watching TV. But then I started cycling, and it immediately took so much more time. Like if I wanted to cycle in the morning before work, I had to get up like well before 6, because like, you know, whatever, if you're getting on, you're going minimum for 2 hours, even on the trainer, it's like whatever, an hour 40 or something like that. So that was when I started to be like, oh, like this is hard to have a job and actually get in a lot of cycling training. But then when I started triathlon, I had already quit my job by that point. So I was like free to do whatever all day. So I had like a little bit of experience of starting to bike and realizing how early you had to get up or how late you had to do it. And then how you like don't have much of a social life after that. Cause it's like you either choose to do your Zwift workout after work or you hang out with your friends. And like, I was always choosing to get on Zwift, cause like, that's what I was obsessed with at the time.
That's an interesting thing that you said there with just like the transitional part of like your, obviously beginning to ride, but like, have you ever considered like, and you guys might have experience with this too, was like age groupers who are like pretty, you know, top of their age group at like Ironman races, like some of them train say 15, 16 hours a week and a full-time job. I almost feel like these days, just to even get your like pro license or your pro card, you know, people are already like having to shift to part-time because like it's pretty difficult now to get your pro license without doing like at least 20 hours of training a week. And I'd say like doing 20 hours of training in a full-time job, like your proper 9-to-5 kind of job, is that's a lot. It's very intense. Yeah.
Well, I think you see now like most people that are winning the age group races, they're not people that have those like 9-to-5 jobs, are they? They're probably people that a bit more flexible. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or they've taken some time off work to focus on it or whatever. But yeah, I think I'd agree with you. Like it seems like the age group stuff's getting a lot more competitive and people are actually considering even just like taking a bit of time off work for age group stuff as well.
Yeah. If I had to do that though, if I had to work a full on just 9 to 5, 5 days a week, I would probably just do, I wouldn't train that much during the week and I would just do like 2 7-hour days on Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, but actually that's what I would do.
But then you can't do that without, like, if you want any social life or like a partner or a family.
What triathlete has friends? Andy, you're almost at the point where you're going to be begging to get away from your wife and your daughter to go bike on the trainer. You were about to become those Instagram memes. Lizzo, you've been quiet. You had a job. I have a job.
Yeah, kind of same as you. I didn't really, I guess I started taking triathlon a bit more seriously when I left uni. And then I can't really remember. I wasn't doing heaps. And then COVID happened. I think that's when I was like, oh, we basically, because I was furloughed, I was like, I'm basically being paid to train. So did a bit more during that time. Picked up a stressy in my hip, classic.
Nice.
Sorry, Harry.
Oh,
this is not my fault.
Harry, back at it again.
I said sorry. No, it's all me.
Really, the lack of food.
Harry should be apologizing. Is what I'm gathering.
I don't think it's my fault. Oh.
No, I'm saying sorry because it's fucking dreadful. And then, anyway, fast forward COVID. I was actually, so last year was kind of the defining point for me. I was working. I took a job. I didn't get into my master's. So I took a job working as a physio for Canyon SRAM, the cycling team. Lived in Girona for 7 months, so that was really cool, but it was also probably like very, oh, how do I put this?
I feel like quite a terrible all day.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was in a pretty shit place.
Drop some names.
It didn't.
Were they bitches? No, were they mean?
The girls were
name shame.
It was more management. I basically felt quite bullied. But anyway, I'm not going to go into that because that's could get in trouble. But it wasn't great, and it all ended in tears, quite literally. And in the May, I flew home to do Outlaw Half Nottingham, got my pro license there, flew back to Girona. And I was like, hold on, I could leave this job where I'm basically crying every day. Like, I'm so unhappy. I could drop everything. I've got no obligation to stay. I'm self-employed. I could drop everything, move back home and like actually just say fuck it and go all in on this. So in some way that experience was a blessing because it made me realize, you know, life is really too short to like not chase after the thing you love and you want to do. So I'm really lucky I was in that position to be able to do that. And yeah, I mean, training around that job was pretty horrendous. And it was kind of like 3 days a week where I'd do quite a lot, 3 or 4. Training when we were in Girona, and then we'd be driving like 16 hours to a race in Germany, 16 hours for like a 90k race, where you work like 6:30 to 11:30. It's just like you have no energy, there's like no time for anything, and that was really hard, not being able to train. So then I was like, yeah, I can come home, quit this job and put everything into triathlon. And I have been working since. I work like 2 or 3 half days a week, so like 6 hours a day, and that works really well. And most of them are evenings, so 2 till 8. So I could basically get 2 or 3 training sessions done in the morning, and then I basically have 6 hours of recovery at work. But I think when you say to people that you're working less, it's not necessarily, it obviously does mean you can train a bit more, but I think like Andy said, it actually just gives you more time for recovery, and it gives you more time between sessions, and you can eat properly and you can meal prep and you can do everything that actually Like, I actually can't imagine how someone with a 9 to 5 does it. Like, with the food, with, like, anything. Because I find it hard.
It's probably impossible to do it at a professional level.
Yeah. And to eat well. And also just have the time to eat.
So to answer the question, a lot. You get a lot better if you don't have a job.
But you get a lot poorer. You have less money. Well, a lot less money.
I think the thing that it gave me the most was that I have more mental energy now and more mental energy to put into triathlon. And health, I think that's probably what not working gives you, because you just have more time to put your energy where you want to put it, basically. Because, we don't all want to work.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of money, but I am a very wealthy man.
You can always make more money. You can't make more time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you had to give a concrete, how many minutes do you think, if you are, let's say you do a 4:30, 70.3, which is like pretty good. It's a pretty good age group. Let's say 5 hours, actually. 5 hours, you train 10 hours a week and you have the opportunity to just quit your job and train full time for a year. How much better do you think this person would get from 5 hours?
45 minutes. And if you're wrong and you don't do it, slide into Harry's DMs and tell him how much that he's let you down.
Yeah.
Coach Harry.
Coach Harry, yeah.
45. See, the thing is, I believe that. I think 45 minutes is like, yeah. You could get 45 minutes.
If you completely quit your job,
over a 70.3.
You'd find apps, just volume, just doing double your volume of training, like slowly, obviously, over time. But
No, do it immediately.
So are we telling everyone to quit their jobs?
No, we're just saying if you did, you would take off 45 minutes from your 70.3, at least. The next subject, there were a bunch of different questions that sort of asked this in different ways, but it's basically about sponsorship and how do you go about getting sponsorship as a pro. And sort of another aspect of the question is there's a lot of non-pro influencers these days who get a lot of sponsorships. Brands are giving them money and a lot of, I guess, time, attention, product that otherwise used to only go to pros. So how do you guys go about sponsorship? And this is a funny question because like none of us have a lot of sponsors. Like that's why we're on this podcast. So like we're maybe not the best people to ask this question to. But I guess what have you guys tried, when you started going pro, like to get product or try to get paid from brands? And how has it gone? Has anything worked? Has anything not worked?
I think with all these things you've just got to try so hard, and like, you try 100 times, 99 people are going to say no. Like, I guess like starting out, it was talking to like local bike shops, stuff like that. And then, you end up using certain products, you ask and you get your foot in the door, and it's not necessarily a very good deal, but also you're not at a point where you deserve a good deal as well. So then you build good reputation with the brand. And that's kind of how it's worked for me. But I would say actually on the thought process of age groupers and like age group influencers getting sponsorship from brands, it'd be interesting to get your guys' opinion on this, because my opinion is I've got mixed opinions on it. But if I'm like a marketing manager for a brand or something, I obviously want to make as many sales as possible. So if you do support, if you've got a pro here who's got, let's say, 5,000 followers or something, and then you've got an age grouper who's got 50,000 followers, like, it does make sense to go for the age grouper because you're going to get in front of more people and you are going to sell more products. Like, that is your job. But I know for us, coming from a pro perspective, it is frustrating, but I can see why the companies do it, because ultimately, like, they're interested in making sales and they will make more sales through those people. I'm wondering if you guys agree or disagree.
Well, I agree, because like, if you're a business, you need to sell products. That's what your business is. And you're going to go get your product in the hands of someone who you think is going to sell more of it, which at the end of the day does, there's an aspect of when a professional says it, probably most of their followers know, well, this is a professional. They are very knowledgeable in their field and I'm going to trust what they say more. But then there's just a numbers game of like brand awareness and visibility. And if you give it to someone with 10 times the amount of followers, 10 times more people are going to see it. And that's 10 times more people with your brand in their brains. Just like they know it. And I know there's, I can't give any specific examples. Like there's none in my head right now, but I know like if I've been on Instagram or YouTube and it is a discipline that I'm not familiar with, let's just say surfing, I could not name a surfboard brand. Like, and I'm sure there's tons and I'm sure they're all competing against each other. But if I went and watched someone's surfboarding video, whatever board they're using is the only one that I will know of. And if I'm thinking about surfboards, that is the only brand I will think about buying, you know, and then maybe I'll do some research and see what the other ones, but like that one's going to be the number one.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you guys as well. I think it's a difficult one because obviously, as Harry said, I think from our standpoints, I think we've probably all had conversations where we've approached a company and kind of felt like we pitched really well or whatever it is and feel like, you know, we could potentially be beneficial for the company and it would be obviously great for their support as well. And then they kind of maybe close the door on you. And then a few months later, you see that they've got this influencer age group team or whatever. But I completely understand it because as you guys have both said, like they are just trying to make sales. And I think it's the difficult thing is as professionals is knowing when it's appropriate to take I'd say like an ambassadorship, like you know, someone give you some free kit or something like that and you obviously represent them, or when you actually should take sponsorship or not settle for anything less than sponsorship. And I guess that's the conversation I've had with Harry quite a lot in the past about is like, what is our worth? And like, what are we actually worth to that company? And actually, like, obviously our intent as professionals is to race to the best of our ability. And yeah, we want to represent companies. We want to support companies best we can. But in some cases, I think sometimes it's better just to actually go, well, actually, if that company wants to give loads of free product to loads of age groupers, then, you know, if that's their marketing strategy, then great. Almost like, you should just separate yourself from that situation, which is like, there's companies out there who will specifically only sponsor professionals, but mainly because I think in a lot of areas, professionals will sell a product a lot better. And I'm going to use wetsuits as an example here. Would you feel more, I always feel like professional swimmers using wetsuits, you're going to be inspired to use a wetsuit based on how well the people are swimming. You don't want to see an age group who can't swim using a certain wetsuit brand, because then the association is like, well, if I wear that wetsuit, I'll swim badly. That's just how my brain kind of works.
Yeah, but then, okay, so here's the really annoying thing that I've run into with people I don't know and my girlfriend, is that there's this concept that, let's say someone who runs a 25 or a 30 minute 5K will be on Instagram or be on social media and they'll see someone like us, like they'll see me posting about running whatever 3 minute Ks and my advice on how to get faster. And they'll say someone who's posting about how to break a 20 minute 5K, and they will listen to that person because they're like, that what they have to say is way more applicable to me. This guy is so good, nothing he says applies to, he doesn't understand what it's like to be a 30 minute 5K runner. So none of his advice applies to me. And that's even my own girlfriend said, you don't even, you stop trying to give me advice about getting better at running.
Because you know nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Like you live in a bubble. You don't understand what it's like to be at my level and get better. And I'm like, well, that's not true. But it is this like some psychological effect where if you are posting about how I broke 20 minutes in the 5K, you are going, and this is a huge audience of people. There's way more people trying to break 20 minutes in the 5K than there are trying to break 15. And if you're like, this is how I did it, you're going to get a lot of heads looking at you, you know, taking your advice because you did exactly what they want to do. They don't want to break 15 in the 5K. They want to break 20 minutes. And so your advice becomes irrelevant. And so, but it is like kind of what you were saying before, Andy, if you think about, let's just look at the biggest brands
in triathlon. Like Morton doesn't sponsor age groupers. Morton sponsors Jan Frodeno, Christian Blumenfeld, Gustav Iden, Sam Laidlow. Canyon doesn't sponsor age groupers as far as I know. Does DeBoer, like DeBoer doesn't
sponsor age groupers. You can drop some women's names in there if you fancy it.
Oh, God bless it. Go, well, you go. You got a mic.
Daniela to Morton.
Yeah. No, I get that. And I think that's class as well, isn't it? If you think about it.
Like, yeah, it's like the best brands.
Those top athletes, yeah.
What I found hard in the beginning is that certain brands, and it's much better now because long course triathlon is a much bigger thing generally, is a brand seeing some an age grouper saying they're representing Great Britain at the World Championships. I don't know if this is a worldwide problem, but it's quite, I think in the UK, an age grouper goes to a brand going, I'm going to the World Championships representing Great Britain. And they think that's, they're like at the highest level of their sport and that's the epitome of triathlon. And just not having that basic understanding. In the beginning, that was what I found was the problem. I think now it's not such a problem and hopefully the brands we're reaching out to understand the difference. But I think age groupers played on that quite hard. I don't know if that's a bit out of them.
Well, how good is that when someone posts like fifth in the world, you know, and it's like, I'm like, cause I used to look at that and I didn't get it. Cause I was like very new to triathlon. I didn't understand like age group racing. And it's like, I came in third. And I'm like, what? Like,
that's crazy.
You don't seem like a top level triathlete. Like scrolling through your Instagram. I don't get it. And then I started to understand. And it's like, and there's no context to it either. But yeah, I would think that friends would understand the difference.
You'd hope so.
Going back to what you said, Harry, about just like how you guys have found, and you guys could be as transparent as you want about this, but like successful partners you have now, how did they come about? You haven't got to necessarily name the brand, but have you got a couple of like situations or conversations or how did you land a couple of your partners? Because I've definitely got a couple of stories, but yeah, have you guys got any?
Couples.com. Both couple.com and a newer one as of this year, Lifestacks, they both approached me, right? And that is just a product of YouTube, like having a good amount of exposure. So it's just getting a lot of eyes on it, and it tends to more people reach out to me than probably in a normal case. And most of the time it's like worthless, you know, it's someone's trying to offer me product in exchange for like a dedicated YouTube review, something like that. But those two, like, it just very, very, very rare. They just basically fell on my lap. But those are my only like triathlon deals currently. I mean, almost pretty much everything has come through YouTube and not through race results, I would say. So maybe I'm a bit of a special case. I don't know if Harry, you've had a similar experience with being able to sort of leverage the YouTube channel.
Probably not as much as you, but a little bit. Had a bit of interest over the years, yeah. Not from couples.com.
Unfortunately.
And what do they slide into your DMs? Get me on in contact. Instagram.
LinkedIn, actually.
LinkedIn, okay, fair.
Yeah, it was a very business arrangement.
Oh, nice.
I like it.
For about 2 years, I had this foot injury that was really killing my run training. I'd do this same pattern where I'd run for 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, and then my foot niggle would come back and I'd have to take 2, 3, 4 weeks off, and then I'd go, okay, it's good now, and I'd get back into my running and I'd do the same thing. I'd run for, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, and then it would pop up again. And this cycle just kept repeating itself. And sometimes I would take 2 weeks off. Sometimes I would take as much as like 8 to 12 weeks off. And I just was never getting anywhere. Like my running was just never getting any better. I really didn't progress at all for about 2 years. In fact, I went backwards quite a lot. And then like about 4 to 5 months ago, I was at this point where I'm like, I was seriously just considering like maybe I just won't ever be able to run again. But then in the lead up to the US Open, the PTO US Open, I saw Jan Frodeno using a lever running system. And then a friend of mine, Hannah Wells, who's also a professional triathlete, I saw her using one a lot and talked to her, and she told me about how she was using it for almost all of her running, and now she's back running as good as she ever has. And saw Laura Phillip using one and Braden Curry using one. I was like, I'm just going to try one of these. So yeah, I decided to buy myself a lever running system, and I started using it for pretty much all of my runs. In fact, for about the first 4 to 5 weeks, it was all of my runs. And for those of you who don't know what a lever running system is, it's a system that you put onto a treadmill, and then you connect it to like your hips using a special pair of run shorts, and it just takes weight off while you run. So my body weight is about 85 kilograms, and at the start I was taking like 12 to 14 kilograms off. So my body weight when I was running was like 73 to 71 kilograms. And so, yeah, I was just using it at my local gym where I use the treadmills. And basically what it does is, because of that reduction in body weight, it reduces the load through your tendons, joints, bones, et cetera, so that you can do more running when you're coming back from injury, or even if you're completely injury free. It's just a way to increase the volume and frequency of your running week to week, so that you prevent getting injured. Because running is just such a risky part of triathlon and training in general. And it really did change my run training when I started to use one. I think I've done, oh God, I reckon I've done like 20 weeks of running now where I've been able to run. And what I've been doing now is slowly reducing the amount of time I spend using my lever system and reducing the weight I'm taking off while I use it. So now I'm only doing like one, maybe two runs in it per week. And I take off about 6 to 7 kilograms every time I do it. And I do plan to use it at least once or twice a week for 2024 for the whole year, as I really think it's such a safe way to make sure you can do some extra running and not get injured. And I've just found that the more consistent I can be and the less injured I am and the less breaks I have to take, then the better and better I run. Because for those 2 years, I just found out that nothing wrecks my running like having to take those 2, 6, 8, 12 weeks off. And You just like find no consistency, all because of a stupid, frustrating little niggle, because you really want to get out there and run. After about 2 months of using it, I was just absolutely loving it. Like I couldn't believe how much it had changed my running. It was the most pain-free I'd ever run. I was running more consistently and more frequently week after week. And I reached out to Lever, Movement, to see if they'd be interested in partnering with the podcast in 2024, just because I loved the product so much. I was like, I just want to tell people about this. So it'd be awesome if they partnered with the podcast. Like, they didn't give me the lever running system. I went and bought one for myself. So it's not like they gave me it and I was promoting it because of that. It's like, this is a product I'm using. I'm loving it and I just want to promote it. And they came back and said, yeah, they'd love to partner with the podcast. So they're jumping on to support the podcast in 2024, which I'm really excited about. And if you can relate to why I started using my lever running system, or why I'm going to keep using it every week in 2024 and would like to get one for yourself, then you can head to levermovement.com. And I've got a discount code that you can use. It's just TTH, which gets you a massive 20% off your anything from the website. So yeah, that really does take a bit of price off it, which is great. So it does support the show as well. But more importantly, Lever is just a product I know could help so many people, because I bought one myself and I just know how much I've bloody loved it and how much I'm going to keep using it in 2024 and probably even further on than that. And yeah, since I've got it, I've spoken to even more professional triathletes who I had no idea used it, because they weren't sponsored by them or anything. They were just using it of their own accord like me. And they've said the same thing as me, that they don't have to be injured to use it. They just use it on top of their running, their additional, like it's just like a little additional on top of their run training, so that they can increase their volume and their mileage and do it in a way where they don't have to risk getting injured, which, yeah, that consistency leads to their running getting better and better. So, yep, if you can relate and you want to try, want to use it for yourself, levermovement.com and use the discount code TTH.
All right, but Lizzie, so how's it going for you? You had like some pretty killer results last year. I'm sure you were, I mean, it's like the year is pretty well on at this point, but did you get anything lined up, or what was your experience kind of like Neo Pro, good results?
Honestly, it's gone pretty terribly. I've got Precision Hydration on board, which is obviously awesome, and like having that product is a really big like financial help, because I reckon I was spending like 30 to 50 quid a month on nutrition. So that's really helpful. But there is a certain wetsuit brand that was really keen to get on board and then is now has completely ghosted me. So that's fantastic. Yeah, so I'm buzzing about that because we're in February tomorrow. So, well, no, a couple of days.
It better not be tomorrow. I haven't done my tax return yet.
Oh, yeah. yeah, it's obviously I've got a wheel sponsor this year, which is a brand local to Andy, CES Sport, little Welsh brand. Welsh, so that's really awesome. Nice. They sponsor Jody Stimson. They've probably got a shareholder.
I don't, just to let everyone know.
It's really, yeah, it's really hard. And I'm part of me thinks it's because of social media. It's not something I'd put a huge amount of, not effort. I do put a lot of effort into it, but I find it really difficult and I find it really draining and very time consuming. And I feel like that's what a lot of brands look for now, as opposed to like your race results. And I find, you know, that's just a really frustrating thing, that I want to not be on my phone all the time and trying to think of cool things to do. And not having YouTube, I think now is quite a big, people don't have YouTube, but as a, like, seems every pro has a YouTube. It's just a really easy way to show off your brands. But I don't know, I haven't even got 5,000 followers, and I think it's quite a lot of brands have contacted and I've been like, look, I've done this year, and they're like, well, you just haven't got enough followers. Oh. And that is really hard, because it's like, it's just shallow, isn't it? And I understand that they're a business and that's how they, you know, create their income and everything, but it's just hard, because it's like, we have to have, you know, people in our position, that it's hard what we do, and it's not very financially viable at the moment. You know, having that self-belief is quite hard to come across anyway, and then when you're constantly being shut down by brands that you really think actually be a really good thing for their brand, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And it is constant, and like, you know, I've reached out to so many people, and it's 99% of the time it's like, nah, thanks. Or it's like, marketing budget's full, or
yeah, that's a classic. Don't have the budget. Something to add to this though, like, it's I think I've chatted with Andy about this. I think now it is difficult to get money from people, but I think you're better off, people in our position or any pro athlete, you're better off getting companies to give you cash that they're maybe not involved in triathlon, in the triathlon space.
Yeah, 100%.
And then you can do what you want with that money, rather than being like, let's say, for example, New Balance, right? If I got an opportunity to work with New Balance, right, and then contracted to promote them X amount of times a month, or if a company, let's say it's a mortgage broker or an insurance company or whatever, if they gave me 10 grand a year, I think I'd rather take the 10 grand, because then I can buy whatever shoes I want. I can buy whatever kit I want. I'm not obligated.
How do you pitch that though?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's very difficult. Yeah. And it all comes down to, first of all, being in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people. Yeah. It's so difficult, yeah, man. Like, it's so difficult. And especially, like, I mean, people are pretty tight for money at the minute, so, you know, it's difficult to get money from people.
It's a terrible time to ask for money.
But I personally think you're better off doing that. Then you don't have to put, you know, those other brands like logos on your kit. You don't have to promote them. You can just use the money for what you want. But that doesn't really solve anyone's problem, because it's difficult getting money, obviously.
You're like, yeah, don't get a triathlon endemic sponsor. Just get a mortgage broker to give you $10,000. Like,
yeah, okay, just get someone to give you a couple hundred K.
I think what Harry's trying to pitch is maybe a bit too high. Maybe a couple of $1,000.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Mortgage brokers, send them our way.
Yeah.
I guess what Harry's kind of said is kind of the way I've gone about the last couple of years, where I do have kind of a few sponsors who are local to me in Swansea, who support me, Companies like DW Harris, Ashmole, HMY, like these companies are, you know, from different walks of life, not necessarily triathlon specific. And what they've done is they see value in terms of a local, you know, marketing, you know, because obviously like it's triathlon's big in South Wales, especially in Swansea. So supporting the local professional for them seems like a good business decision. And Zach also the as Harry says there, it's not a large amount of money and it's tax deductible for a company to use you as an expense, basically, which works in a nice way because you get money. I think for those that are newly professional and like aren't able to, you know, get your Canyons, Trek or whatever those big companies are to, you know, sponsor you in the short term, it's kind of like, well, actually, if you can find local people who are willing to, you know, stand behind you and back you a little bit. And I think most of those connections have been, you know, I've, again, a bit like you all said, I've sent so many emails, I've sent so many messages, and all of those, I say, Harry said 99, and I think was it 99 and one out of 100? I'd say it's probably even worse than that, mate.
It's probably more. It's worse. 1,000.
Yeah.
But I'd probably say that the majority of my partnerships I have now have actually come from more like human interaction. So people who are involved in the sport, people you meet at the swimming pool, conversations you have like really random times of day and in places, and they just spark a conversation of like, what do you do for work? What's these sort of conversations?
Yeah.
And then building a relationship and then actually
taking their money.
Look, and then, no, but I think it's almost like if they show interest in what you're doing and you kind of say, well, I'm trying to make this a professional career, then you kind of open the door for a conversation, which is like, would your company be interested in?
And I think also as well, you think like the triathlon world, like people who do triathlon are pretty well off. And there are obviously people who race triathlon who have their own businesses and stuff like that. So it probably is the way to go. Like Andy's been saying, like when you're better in the sport, it's probably then a better time to go for, you know, the Canyons and those big brands. But actually, like maybe for us, like, you know, where we're at, it's probably better to contact local companies that maybe, yeah, like they're not involved in triathlon, but they're willing to give a little bit of funding towards it.
Yeah, it's not a lot of, and even if it's just like, I guess something is better than nothing, especially when, you know, all of us are doing
a couple hundred bucks changes everything.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. If someone
really
gives
does.
You enough money to pay for a flight,
that.
you know, a flight to a race, accommodation, like a smaller amount of money can cover, you know, Lizzie's cost to go to Mallorca. And then if she then gets on the podium, then it's a very profitable weekend for a professional. Whereas, like, if she's got to pay for accommodation and...
I might ask the local bakery for a discount code because I'm spending so much money there.
It's cheap as well.
I know.
All right, guys. I want to end this podcast by asking... I guess it's not that controversial of a question, but Alistair Moffat sent in, how many pros do you think are doping, men and women? Give a number and I'll narrow it down of the top 50 men and top 50 women each. Just give a number of how many you think are doping. And doping, this doesn't have to be full on blood bags, but maybe like testosterone or I don't know what else is
buying followers.
Instagram
is that,
doping.
Is that now doping?
Instagram doping. Or cheating, like mechanical doping. Something, you know, like motors in the bikes or...
I don't know if anyone's doing that really.
No, yeah, it's probably tough. Mm-hmm. I think that of the top 50 males, 8. That
eight.
Seems low. It seems
that's
low.
Wow. Well, I thought
that sounds high.
That seems high, yeah.
You think eight of the top 50?
I don't know, man.
What about the women?
3.
So much, much cleaner.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Probably pretty accurate. Yeah.
Come on.
I'd probably say three, and then two.
Three men.
Three and yeah. two.
When you say two, it's obviously very specific names. We won't say them, but
it's a guess.
But
yeah, okay, I probably agree with Andy. Like 3-2, I think.
So, really, like, I mean, do you consider that the sport being mostly clean, or are these 3 and 2 kind of the ones who are winning everything?
I don't think necessarily the guys who are winning everything are the ones. I think I believe that triathlon is a sport that you can definitely get to the top clean.
That's why I think the numbers are low. That.
I think you can 100%, like, because I know 100% that Leon is clean and he is at the top of the sport, and I train with him every day and he's an absolute weapon. So I believe in myself that you can get to the top of sport without it, but it's like, it obviously, it there probably are people doing it.
Is it, do you think it's safe to say we were all a little bit naive before the Colin case?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have said,
I think
zero.
I'm still maybe more literally. Naive a little bit.
Like, yeah. You never want to.
Yeah,
or not necessarily naive, but you really just don't want to believe it.
I was going to say 15. Like, part of me was going to be like 15.
Wow,
you reckon?
Like, I don't reckon though. I don't know.
I don't know. That seems high, man.
I don't want to believe it, but I don't.
Like, that'd be sad, wouldn't it?
Because, like, I know, like, what you were saying about Leon, and like Lionel is obviously, he's still in the top 50. But I know for a fact that Lionel is on nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he's, you know, and I would assume, I haven't hung out with Sam Long much, but pretty sure he's clean. And he's pretty much at the tippy top.
Yeah.
So, are you going to keep listing, you know, like, the rest of the professionals and then stop saying the ones you think are not?
Yeah, leaving them out.
This is getting dangerous.
Yeah. We'll just
anyway.
Leave.
I think
okay. So,
on average, there's like 4 men doping and 2 women is what we've settled on.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Sure. All right. Anyway, that's an hour.
We're getting cancelled.
Yeah. Nobody listens to this.
Funny
anyway.
Jack.
Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll be back at it again next week or 2 weeks or something. Follow the Chase Pack on Instagram.
Cheers, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye. I'm tired of looking around the world, wondering what I gotta do, who I'm supposed to be.